Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to this sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of this sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on Mushing.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert, and we are here at the IFS World Championships Dryland for both Masters and Elite. And I am joined here by two ladies from New Jersey, Alexandra and Christine. And we're going to start with Alexandra first. Alexandra, do us a favor and introduce yourself and briefly tell us who you are and what you're all about, please.
Awesome. Yeah, so my name's Alex. I run a team of six dogs. We're based out of the Pine Barrens in New Jersey. I started mushing about 3.5 years ago. I had a Shepsky that had far too much energy and needed an outlet, and was just, like, super strong, you know, out the box. And I thought it would be a great activity for him. And I was looking into the Iditarod, basically, and that history, because it always interested me. And over the course of a few days, basically researching on Google, mushing, you know, urban mushing, modern mushing, I fell upon Dryland. And found the Jersey Sands Sled Dog Racing Association website, which is our home club. So we went out day one, harnessed him up, and went 4 miles.
Right off the bat.
It was a good time. And then since then, I used to work in corporate. I was in hospitality and then community living, like managing the HOA or the COA. But I've since then started my own business based around mushing, Odonai Canine. So we do training, we do sled dog seminars and presentations. I do have also some of a rescue operation going, and basically anything to do with dogs and teaching people about the sport of dryland and how accessible it is. You know, it used to be that for a sled dog team, you needed a whole kennel of dogs and a lot of very specialized equipment. And while there is the specialized stuff we have to keep us safe and whatnot, you know, your antenna and your harness and your lines, it's a bike and a dog and a helmet. Most people have those things.
Yes. And for folks that are listening, of course, we are at a dog race. So you're going to hear dogs barking and carrying on. So it is definitely not going to be perfect audio. But hey, this is what it's all about. Christine, tell us a little bit about you, please.
Yeah. So, also from New Jersey, prior to having my team, I had two mixed breed huskies that I used to just recreationally mush with on scooter. And unfortunately, you know, I lost them during the pandemic. You know, they reached their 15-year mark, and, you know, we put them to sleep. And I really wanted to get another dog, and I just loved huskies so much and found a really awesome breeder in South Jersey. And I got, you know, my first registered, you know, breed husky, and then a year later got a second one. And, you know, it was like, okay, well, I guess I could train them on my own, but it'd be really cool to find some other people doing this. And that's how I found Jersey Sands.
Okay.
And that's what led me to the club in New Jersey. And that's when I met Alex and Brian and everybody else who was involved. And I had only intentionally thought about just doing it recreationally. Like, I just wanted us to have a good time and the dogs to get some exercise. And after we trained with the club for a little while, somebody kind of said, well, maybe you should try out a race. I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. And it was a race in New Jersey. So, you know, what have you got to lose? And, you know, once you race that first time, it was just fantastic. So,
wow. Yeah.
So at that point we said, all right, we're doing the thing. And we went from two dogs. I've got now a six dog racing team. Yeah. And one rescue who is our mascot, and we love her dearly, but you know, she is just our team support. And yeah, we got into all kinds of, you know, different activities. So I started off with bike. I was a biker before this. So we started off with two dog bike, and then I got a scooter, and now I have a rig. So we're going to start, you know, four dog rig this fall. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, I'm going to stick with you, Christine.
Yep.
When people think of New Jersey,
right,
especially people listening around the world,
yeah.
They do not think of dog mushing.
No, absolutely
right?
Not.
Because they think New Jersey, New York City, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Tell us about your geography, where you're at, where you train, that sort of stuff.
Right.
And then we're going to talk a little bit about what people know about mushing in your local area.
Yeah, so in our local area, a lot of people don't know about dog mushing. And, you know, to Alex's point, you know, as she's trying to educate people, you know, through her business about dog mushing, not a lot of people know about it at all. And I'll, even, you know, when people ask me, well, how many dogs do you have? And, you know, in the mushing community, having seven dogs, that's not a lot of dogs. That's like a small amount of dogs. But, you know, for people in New Jersey, it's like, oh, my God, why would you ever have seven dogs? It's like, well, this is what we do with them, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit challenging. So I live in, it's kind of in between Central and North Jersey.
Okay.
So there's a lot of trails, but they're not really appropriate for mushing. There's a lot of great hiking trails, but it's all single track, a lot of mountains and rocks and things like that. So there is a trail that we found near us. It's kind of not really advertised. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere where we train. We also train down in the Pine Barrens. They've got these really great sandy equestrian trails down there that will allow the dogs. But even like the closest place to me, the reservation that's near me doesn't allow bikes, you know, at all. So we can't train the dogs there. So it's a little bit challenging, but, you know, if you love the sport, you find the place, you know. So there are some trails we go out on with some of our older dogs where there's a lot of people, you know, who are just kind of out there either biking or walking. And then they see the dogs fly past and they're like, oh, what's going on? Yeah. So we'll save those trails for our older and experienced dogs. But, you know, once they get older, they just fly past those people. They don't care, you know.
So before we head over to Alex, you mentioned Central to Northern New Jersey for geography. How far are you from New York City?
So I'm only about maybe 40 minutes from New York City.
So there, I guess the moral of this whole thing is you can literally do this type of dog mushing anywhere in the world.
Anywhere, yes.
I just interviewed some folks from Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
So an entirely different world.
Right.
Literally down there compared to up here. It is so cool to meet everybody. Let's go to Alex here. Alex, you had mentioned that you have a business that you're doing training and seminars and that sort of stuff. Back to what we were talking about with Christine, how do people find out about dog mushing? Like you said, you were searching for Iditarod,
and here
you are. You stumbled onto this club. What is the in the dog training world? And we own a dog training business, so I'm familiar. What is the perception of canine sports to the basic pet owner? What do they think about canine sports? Do they just think walking their dog, or do they think something as extreme as six dogs on a cart?
A lot of people are aware of, you know, agility and the stuff that you see on the AKC trials that are televised and that have that certain audience in the distribution. Many of them don't know of mushing outside the context of snow and the Iditarod. Because, you know, almost everyone's heard of Balto or Togo, but and of that journey. So when people ask us what dog sport we do and we get into that, I usually go for the visual aids. I find that the best way to really reach people and to spread awareness is with this wonderful tool of social media. My Instagram, I'll post videos of what it's like training, of what our runs are like, of the race environment, and, you know, help advertise those things. And then also growing your home club to the extent you can at the local level, because, you know, Jersey Sands has been operating in the Pines for, goodness, I think we're up close to 50 years.
Wow.
And
There
was Dick Dalakian back in the day lobbied to the state to overturn a law that would have prohibited dog mushing. It was really meant as like livestock protection, that you can't have animals pulling a cart. But when it was explained, hey, you know, this is dryland mushing. It's a sport. You can't make a rope pull like the huskies want to do it. And it's for recreation or for the health of the dogs. That made that possible in New Jersey to begin with. And we're just carrying on that tradition. So, you know, even if they don't, if they've never heard of the Iditarod and they've never heard of mushing, you explain to them, you know, bike or wheels, line, dog, and it does click. I also find newer generations or just more modern pet owners are more conscientious of the fact that a walk sometimes isn't enough. There's people who will search out a dog sport to kind of help with behavioral things. So that's one segment. And I will get some referrals from other trainers or vets saying, you know, I think that your dog's misbehaving. Obviously, it's not pain. You rule that out first. It's not necessarily your training regimen. It's they're frustrated. They don't have their outlet. People will get purebreds or a dog that they think is impressive and not understand the heritage of that dog and of what, you know, if you have, everyone wants a Malinois because they became so popular in pop culture and they were featured. Okay, well, do you want a small fur missile all the time? Can you handle the needs of the dog? People see huskies and they want huskies all the time because they're beautiful. You know, the blue eyes, the masks, they look like wolves. Game of Thrones, the dire wolves brought all that out. And you have that Vogue puppy period where everyone has a litter and tries to get one. And then they say, oh, my goodness, this thing is pulling my arms out of my sockets. Well, yes, that's what they've been bred to do for almost 10,000 years. So to express that makes the dogs happier and the people happier and just all around better family functioning.
So we've got all of our PSAs out of the way now. lots of great information there. We'll stick with you, Alex, and we'll jump over to you. Same question to both of you guys. We're here at the World Championships. Both of you guys have been involved with the sport for a little while. What did it, the first question, and then I'll have both of you answer, what did it take to get here? What type of racing did you have to do? That sort of thing. What was the road to the championship?
Road to championship was attending as many sanctioned races as we possibly could last year. So on the circuit, there are races sanctioned by IFSS, and they'll select, I think it's 10 per continent each year, so those are limited. And then also ISDRA, which is the other governing body that we operate under in the United States. So attending those accredited races, we made it out to 8. One of those was also Continentals, which was almost a pre-qualification for Worlds.
At the same spot.
Correct, yep. Yes. So we were here, both of us were here last year at Continentals to compete.
Yep.
And kind of get our toes wet and show that qualification. And then the other 8 races, we were out to Michigan, we were in Pennsylvania, we were in Ohio, we were in Georgia, we were in New York, we were in Jersey. Didn't make it out to the West Coast, but just trying to hit as many of those circuit races as we could to build the record that then became part of the application for Worlds.
All right, let's go to you, Christine. So we got sort of the circuit.
Yeah.
What did it take you to get here? What type of classes did you compete in? How did you do? Tell us a little bit about your dogs and getting here.
Yeah, so, you know, off the back of what Alex shared, so Alex and I are training partners. Like, yep. we even joked inside that, like, probably the last couple of years we've spent more time together than, like,
than anyone else.
Yeah, okay. Than anybody else.
All right.
So, I mean, like, the intimate part of that is that, you know, in New Jersey, especially, like, at the beginning of the season like this, it's still hot. So we're up, like, before dawn, you know, with the headlamps on at 5 o'clock in the morning, out training dogs, like, trying not to run into deer and, like, do all that thing. And then we have to work, you know, for the rest of the day. So you're sacrificing, you know, kind of that morning sleep and some of that comfort. But, you know, we love what we do, so that's what we do. You know, as the season continues, we'll do the opposite. We'll work a full day and then meet at 6 o'clock and run the dogs with the headlamps because now it's dark, you know, and we're trying to get the temperatures. So there's a fair bit of that happens. We also, the both of us, have sustained kind of pretty significant injuries, you know, and I will give credit to Alex here publicly. Like, I last year at an IFSS, you know, race, sanctioned race, I sustained a really bad ankle injury. And Alex and another friend trained my dogs for weeks when I could barely walk, you know. So it's this community effort, you know, as well, that you've got people there to support you and help you out. And, you know, you're looking out for their dogs. They're looking out for yours. You know, we have our mentor here who's, he says he's just a handler this week, you know, but I mean, he's been training us like the whole time, and now he's here to help us out, you know. So it's this whole community effort, you know, as well as, you know, kind of saying, well, I'd like to go out tonight, but I need to run dogs tonight. And that's what we do. Like, they're, you know, the dogs are not just our family. Like, they, of course they're our family, but I feel like my dogs are like an extension of me also, you know. Like,
I love it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Alex here. Alex, you said you were at the Continental. I was here last year as well. A little bit different atmosphere, about the same amount of people. I think there was about 200 or 250-ish, but a little bit more amped up, if you will, than there. Set the scene for us, for folks that are listening. What is it like here? Maybe tell us about the atmosphere, some of the events that have taken place. The trail. Give us a flavor of the race.
Sure. So, you know, being here at the beautiful Minocqua Winter Park, you have really no choice but to engage with the surroundings. We're in a pretty remote area of Wisconsin, up on a hill in the Land of Lakes. There's not much signal. So a big thing when you come out to these dog races is that you're often you're often off the grid in one way or another. However, that being said, so you think, all right, I'm at this very remote ski resort, and it's absolutely buzzing. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of vehicles, rigs that you wouldn't imagine, you know, where you're looking at a truck and it's got this contraption of a box on the back that's holding hundreds of pounds of dogs and all their equipment. People have their different staging areas for their camp and to keep their dogs safe, you know, at our vehicles in between races. Everything over towards the race line is a lot of activity. People running around, checking times, getting ready for their next heats. There's some vendors. So the vendors, I think, are more than Continentals last year. There's food going. There's different the different clubs with some merchandise, gear for the dogs in case anyone needs something while we're here. Keeping all these mushers fed is super important as well. So we appreciate the food trucks. Getting out to the trail, it's beautiful. It's just nice rolling hills, and it's really a good spot to disengage and then just be at one with your dog or your dogs and the trail. Because as soon as we come past this the start chute here, start chute has maybe a football field along the main road where you're really waving at the spectators. But then you get under the trees and it's all the noise falls away. It's pretty quiet in there. All you hear are the dogs and maybe other mushers that are by you. But even that fades away if they're not 100 feet or so behind or in front of you. The trees catch all that noise. Trail helps there, but they're also trying not to be present if they don't need to be. They kind of just melt back and let you do your thing with your dog. And just silence, you know. Most of my team, I don't have to call out trail directions. They're reading the trail for G or Haw or Woe. So just, it's a good, very quiet on the trail, reaching that synergy with your dog. And then some commotion at the finish line. Definitely all the well wishers waiting to catch you and you know, asking how your race went, and that that sense of accomplishment just passing that line and seeing everyone there. But super busy, and then the chalet is like a beehive. So the chalet is the only building on this entire site now that we're having this event with hundreds and hundreds of people and hundreds of dogs. So it's kind of a base of operations. The USFSS team and the volunteers are working out of here. And then all the mushers gather, you know, warm up a little bit inside and find your friends, look at your times, snag some raffle tickets. It's a big thing.
It is. And beautiful fall colors.
Yes.
Here. What a great place for a dog race. One final question, then a couple of rapid fire. And this one's going to be to Christine. We're doing this midweek. literally middle of the week here. How has your racing gone so far?
Yeah, racing has been interesting so far, I will say. So I one of my events is tomorrow and Sunday. Uh-huh. So that's two dog scooter. And it's with, you know, two of my older dogs. So I call them team reliable. So I'm not worried about that at all. But I raced one dog bike, you know, registered breed on Tuesday and Wednesday. And it's with one of my young guys. He's not quite 2 years old yet. So he just made the cut. So IFSS will not allow a dog younger than 18 months old, you know, to race. So he'll be 2 years old in December. And, you know, he's a big, strong guy, and I love him to death. And he wrapped me around a tree, you know, on day two. So, you know, you have to see the video. That's all I'll say.
Okay. If we can find that video, guys, if we can find that video, we're going to put it on the show notes page.
Oh,
that's the beauty of not only social media, but of sharing for sure.
So, and sometimes things just don't go the way you plan. And I wasn't hurt at all. He was fine. I gave him a hug. I got back on the bike, and we finished the race. It was fantastic.
Excellent.
You know, so, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to stick with you. Three more questions here on the podcast. My first question is, what is one piece of gear you always carry with you other than your phone?
Oh,
anything. I mean, it could be a pocket knife or...
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Chapstick.
So many. Yes.
Anything.
Yes. All right, so one piece of gear. I know Alex is laughing over here, and she's tapping her head. So one piece of gear, I will go with that then, Alex. One piece of gear that I have to have with me, I have to have the best helmet ever.
Okay.
So, and the reason why we're laughing, so the dog that I just talked about, you know, he dumped me here on the race, but he has dumped me before. Like, so, you know, and Alex was riding behind me once when he decided to haul after a squirrel. And dumped me on the bike, and my head hit the ground so hard that I will never forget that sound. And so we've been riding Smith helmets, so, you know, shout out to Smith, you know, for their good gear. Yeah, they've been saving my life, you know, this whole mushing journey. So
not a cheap Walmart bike helmet.
No, do not get a cheap Walmart bike helmet. Get a good helmet.
Okay. All right, next question is, I ask this to all of our guests, and that is... you've been involved with the sport for a while, and you have time to think about these, Alex.
Ooh.
Is what is the biggest challenge right now for our sport, whether it be the smaller classes like this, all the way up to Iditarod? Is it climate change? Is it animal rights? Is it financial? Is it sponsors? What do you see as the biggest challenge?
Yeah, honestly, I think the biggest challenge is weather.
Okay.
I think there is definitely some financial challenge, you know, and all of those exist. But I think the weather is getting really hard for us, you know. You know, in years past, you know, as in New Jersey, we could count on it being cold by at least the beginning of October, you know, and we're going to go back to New Jersey, and we had some days in October where it was, you know, 70 degrees. I can't run a Husky in 70 degrees, you know, so it puts the challenge on us of, well, when are we going to train? When are we getting the dogs out there? So, you know, and we've seen even this past year, a lot of the snow races were canceled that had previously been running for years and years, you know, because there's not enough snow. So I personally think that the weather is a great challenge, you know, for us. So we're either going to need to figure out how we do more dry land sports, or all of us are going to be traveling further north to try to get snow, you know.
And it's interesting you say that. I usually don't comment here, but being in Alaska, we only have one dry land event.
Okay.
And usually this is the hotbed of mushing.
Right,
it has been. With
the
bear grease and the history of the trailblazers and all that. All the events are going to dry land now.
Yeah, exactly.
They have a huge dry land scene down here where before it was snow.
All snow. Yeah, all snow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, let's turn it over to Alex. Oh, but last question. I forgot.
Oh, okay.
Where can folks find you? Where are you at on socials? At Instagram, Facebook?
I am on Instagram at CMS Husky Mom.
Okay. All right, let's go to Alex. Alex, the same questions to you is, what is one piece of gear you never leave home without other than your phone?
Am I allowed to say my dog?
Can I say your dog?
He's not here.
I mean, it's the guy. He's the only one working sometimes.
Yeah.
It's not me. No, I would say my eye protection. I have horrible vision, just ridiculously nearsighted. So I don't always like wearing my glasses. Actually, I have my glasses on now because then I don't have shade protection. One of the most important things for me is being able to see the trail so I can read where I'm supposed to ride and see what the dogs are doing. And there's dirt flying up. There's sand flying up.
Rocks.
If it's rocks, if it's raining, I find it very important to keep my vision clear so I can kind of keep the train going.
Do you have a particular brand or style or something?
I do Ray-Ban polarized for almost everything. I do need the polarization on the lens that really cuts. And there's certain films nowadays that are specifically to, you know, cut snow glare or to cut certain types of light. So I have just a stable of Ray-Bans. And then for rainy days, I'll have anti-fog, just clear goggles.
Okay.
You know, kind of like your Home Depot even.
Yep.
Workman's thing.
Okay. Next question is what's the biggest challenge for the sport right now?
I think that the biggest challenge is in growing it. I think that there are enough people who want to participate, but with the way clubs are able to function, which is also kind of a factor of either sponsorships or finances, but the logistics of putting on a race can be a lot. It's demanding. So the club only has so many volunteers. The more active clubs will try to have 4 or 5 events every year. And then even to grow it, though, it's normally held over a weekend, which is what people can accommodate given most people's work schedules. And to travel that, you know, you expect a day on the road, 2 days racing, the day or, you know, half a day back home. There's only so many mushers that you can run in that time period on a certain trail without either one running into temps in the afternoon or it's just simply like an insanely long race. I'm liking the adaptation we're seeing at some races like the Farmers Loop, where it's really a trail system that they can change to shorten it up either for weather or to accommodate more teams. Or if something goes on, you know, more volunteers, more help, we can start running 2 courses at the same race.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, that's something that I see as a challenge and that we've talked about maybe tackling that challenge at our home race for Jersey Devil, because it's hundreds of miles of a trail system in the Brandenburg Forest.
Interesting.
And they're all suitable for mushing, really. So to say, all right, we want to have this huge Eastern Seaboard race and have even more of a sport class, because not everyone has to do it at, you know, the level where they're going to Worlds to enjoy it. You could do sport, you know, have the elite, have more fun runs. But being able to expand races, which is, yeah.
All right. And the last question for you on this is how can folks find you?
So you guys can find me. Instagram's our main thing. It's Odin, like O-D-I-N-I, like E-Y-E, canines. So that's my lead boy. He's my one-eyed Odin, the one-eyed sled dog.
And that's the name of your company as well?
Yes.
Very cool. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for joining us here at the Dryland Championships. Good luck on the rest of the week.
Thank you.
We will keep everybody informed. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack. Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to the sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of the sport, in-depth interviews with a top musher, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on mushing.com.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert, and we are here at the IFS World Championships Dryland for both Masters and Elite. And I am joined here by two ladies from New Jersey, Alexandra and Christine. And we're going to start with Alexandra first. Alexandra, do us a favor and introduce yourself and briefly tell us who you are and what you're all about, please.
Awesome. Yeah, so my name's Alex. I run a team of six dogs. We're based out of the Pine Barrens in New Jersey. I started mushing about 3.5 years ago. I had a Shepsky that had far too much energy and needed an outlet, and was just like super strong, you know, out the box. And I thought it would be a great activity for him. And I was looking into the Iditarod, basically, and that history, because it always interested me. And over the course of a few days, basically researching on Google, mushing, you know, urban mushing, modern mushing, I fell upon Dryland and found the Jersey Sand Sled Dog Racing Association website, which is our home club. So we went out day one, harnessed him up, and went 4 miles.
Right off the bat.
Just right off the bat. It was a good time. And then since then, I used to work in corporate. I was in hospitality and then community living, like managing the HOA or the COA. But I've since then started my own business based around mushing, Odonai Canine. So we do training, we do sled dog seminars and presentations. I do have also some of a rescue operation going, and basically anything to do with dogs and teaching people about the sport of dryland and how accessible it is. You know, it used to be that for a sled dog team, you needed a whole kennel of dogs and a lot of very specialized equipment. And while there is the specialized stuff we have to keep us safe and whatnot, you know, your antenna and your harness and your lines, it's a bike and a dog and a helmet. Most people have those things.
Yes. And for folks that are listening, of course, we are at a dog race. So you're going to hear dogs barking and carrying on. So it is definitely not going to be perfect audio. But hey, this is what it's all about. Christine, tell us a little bit about you, please.
Yeah. So also from New Jersey. Prior to having my team, I had two mixed breed huskies that I used to just recreationally mush with on scooter. And unfortunately, you know, I lost them during the pandemic. You know, they reached their 15-year mark, and you know, we put them to sleep. And I really wanted to get another dog, and I just loved huskies so much and found a really awesome breeder in South Jersey. And I got, you know, my first registered breed husky, and then a year later got a second one. And, you know, it was like, okay, well, I guess I could train them on my own, but it'd be really cool to find some other people doing this. And that's how I found Jersey Sands. That's what led me to the club in New Jersey. And that's when I met Alex and Brian and everybody else who was involved. And I had only intentionally thought about just doing it recreationally. Like, I just wanted us to have a good time and the dogs to get some exercise. And after we trained with the club for a little while, somebody kind of said, well, maybe you should try out a race. I'm like, I don't know about that. And it was a race in New Jersey, so, you know, what have you got to lose? And, you know, once you race that first time, it was just fantastic. So, yeah. So at that point, we said, all right, we're doing the thing. And we went from two dogs. I've got now a six-dog racing team. Yeah. And one rescue who is our mascot, and we love her dearly, but, you know, she is just our team support. And yeah, we got into all kinds of, you know, different activities. So I started off with bike. I was a biker before this. So we started off with two dog bike, and then I got a scooter, and now I have a rig. So we're going to start, you know, four dog rig this fall. So I'm really excited about that.
Well, I'm going to stick with you, Christine.
Yep.
when people think of New Jersey, especially people listening around the world, yeah, they do not think of dog mushing.
No, right? Absolutely not.
Because they think New Jersey, New York City, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
Tell us about your geography, where you're at, where you train, that sort of stuff.
Right.
And then we're going to talk a little bit about what people know about mushing in your local area.
Yeah, so in our local area, a lot of people don't know about dog mushing. And, you know, to Alex's point, you know, as she's trying to educate people, you know, through her business about dog mushing, not a lot of people know about it at all. Even, you know, when people ask me, well, how many dogs do you have? And, you know, in the mushing community, having 7 dogs, that's not a lot of dogs. That's like a small amount of dogs. But, you know, for people in New Jersey, it's like, oh, my God, why would you ever have 7 dogs? It's like, well, this is what we do with them. And it's a little bit challenging. So I live in, it's kind of in between Central and North Jersey. So there's a lot of trails, but they're not really appropriate for mushing. There's a lot of great hiking trails, but it's all single track, a lot of mountains and rocks and things like that. So there is a trail that we found near us. It's kind of not really advertised. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere where we train. We also train down in the Pine Barrens. They've got these really great sandy equestrian trails down there that will allow the dogs. But even like the closest place to me, the reservation that's near me doesn't allow bikes, you know, at all. So we can't train the dogs there. So it's a little bit challenging, but you know, if you love the sport, you find the place. There are some trails we go out on with some of our older dogs where there's a lot of people, you know, who are just kind of out there either biking or walking, and then they see the dogs fly past and they're like, oh, what's going on? Yeah. So we'll save those trails for our older and experienced dogs. But, you know, once they get older, they just fly past those people. They don't care, you know.
Before we head over to Alex, you mentioned Central to Northern New Jersey for geography. How far are you from New York City?
So I'm only about maybe 40 minutes from New York City. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess the moral of this whole thing is you can literally do this type of dog mushing anywhere in the world.
Anywhere, yes.
Yep. I just interviewed some folks from Argentina. Mm-hmm. So an entirely different world.
Right.
Literally down there compared to up here. It is so cool to meet everybody. Let's go to Alex here. Alex, you had mentioned that you have a business that you're doing training and seminars and that sort of stuff. Back to what we were talking about with Christine. How do people find out about dog mushing? Like you said, you were searching for Iditarod,
and here
you are. You stumbled onto this club. What is in the dog training world? And we own a dog training business, so I'm familiar. What is the perception of canine sports to the basic pet owner? What do they think about canine sports? Do they just think walking their dog, or do they think something as extreme as 6 dogs on a cart?
A lot of people are aware of agility and the stuff that you see on the AKC trials that are televised and that have that certain audience in the distribution. Many of them don't know of mushing outside the context of snow and the Iditarod, because, you know, almost everyone's heard of Balto or Togo and of that journey. So when people ask us what dog sport we do and we get into that, I usually go for the visual aids. I find that the best way to really reach people and to spread awareness is with this wonderful tool of social media. My Instagram, I'll post videos of what it's like training, of what our runs are like, of the race environment, and, you know, help advertise those things. And then also growing your home club to the extent you can at the local level, because, you know, Jersey Sands has been operating in the Pines for, goodness, I think we're up close to 50 years.
Wow.
And there was Dick Dalakian back in the day lobbied to the state to overturn a law that would have prohibited dog mushing. It was really meant as like livestock protection, that you can't have animals pulling a cart. But when it was explained, hey, you know, this is dryland mushing, it's a sport, you can't make a rope pull like the huskies want to do it, and it's for recreation or for the health of the dogs, that made that possible in New Jersey to begin with. And we're just carrying on that tradition. So you know, even if they've never heard of the Iditarod and they've never heard of mushing, you explain to them, you know, bike or wheels, line, dog, and it does click. I also find newer generations or just more modern pet owners are more conscientious of the fact that a walk sometimes isn't enough. There's people who will search out a dog sport to kind of help with behavioral things. So that's one segment. And I will get some referrals from other trainers or vets saying, you know, I think that your dog's misbehaving obviously it's not pain. You rule that out first. It's not necessarily your training regimen. It's they're frustrated. They don't have their outlet. People will get purebreds or a dog that they think is impressive and not understand the heritage of that dog and of what, you know, if you have, everyone wants a Malinois, you know, because they became so popular in pop culture and they were featured. Okay, well, do you want a small fur missile all the time? Can you handle the needs of the dog? People see huskies and they want huskies all the time because they're beautiful. You know, the blue eyes, the masks, they look like wolves. Game of Thrones, the dire wolves brought all that out. And you have that vogue puppy period where everyone has a litter and tries to get one. And then they say, oh my goodness, this thing is pulling my arms out of my sockets. Well, yes, that's what they've been bred to do for almost 10,000 years. So to express that makes the dogs happier and the people happier and just all around better family functioning.
So we've got all of our PSAs out of the way now. lots of great information there. We'll stick with you, Alex, and we'll jump over to you. Same question to both of you guys. We're here at the World Championships. Both of you guys have been involved with the sport for a little while. What did it, the first question, and then I'll have both of you answer, what did it take to get here? What type of racing did you have to do? That sort of thing. What was the road to the championship?
Road to championship was attending as many sanctioned races as we possibly could last year. So on the circuit, there are races sanctioned by IFSS, and they'll select, I think it's 10 per continent each year, so those are limited. And then also ISDRA, which is the other governing body that we operate under in the United States. So attending those accredited races, we made it out to 8. One of those was also Continentals, which was almost a pre-qualification for Worlds.
At the same spot.
Correct, yep. Yes. So we were here, both of us were here last year at Continentals to compete and kind of get our toes wet and show that qualification. And then the other 8 races, we were out to Michigan, we were in Pennsylvania, we were in Ohio, we were in Georgia, we were in New York, we were in Jersey. Didn't make it out to the West Coast, but just trying to hit as many of those circuit races as we could to build the record that then became part of the application for Worlds.
All right, let's go to you, Christine. So we got sort of the circuit.
Yeah.
What did it take you to get here? What type of classes did you compete in? How did you do? Tell us a little bit about your dogs and getting here.
Yeah, so, you know, off the back of what Alex shares. So Alex and I are training partners. Like, yep. we even joked inside that, like, probably the last couple of years we've spent more time together than, like,
than anyone else.
Yeah, okay. Than anybody else.
All right.
So, I mean, like, the intimate part of that is that, you know, in New Jersey, especially, like, at the beginning of the season like this, it's still hot. So we're up, like, before dawn, you know, with the headlamps on at 5 o'clock in the morning, out training dogs, like, trying not to run into deer and, like, do all that thing. And then we have to work, you know, for the rest of the day. So you're sacrificing, you know, kind of that morning sleep and some of that comfort. But, you know, we love what we do, so that's what we do. You know, as the season continues, we'll do the opposite. We'll work a full day and then meet at 6 o'clock and run the dogs with the headlamps because now it's dark, you know, and we're trying to get the temperatures. So there's a fair bit of that happens. We also, the both of us, have sustained kind of pretty significant injuries, you know, and I will give credit to Alex here publicly. Last year at an IFSS, you know, sanctioned race, I sustained a really bad ankle injury, and Alex and another friend trained my dogs for weeks when I could barely walk, you know. So it's this community effort, you know, as well, that you've got people there to support you and help you out. And you know, you're looking out for their dogs. They're looking out for yours. We have our mentor here who says he's just a handler this week, you know. But, I mean, he's been training us, like, the whole time, and now he's here to help us out. It's this whole community effort, you know, as well as, you know, kind of saying, well, I'd like to go out tonight, but I need to run dogs tonight. And that's what we do. Like, they're, you know, the dogs are not just our family. Like, they, of course they're our family, but I feel like my dogs are like an extension of me also, you know, like.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's go back to Alex here. Alex, you said you were at the Continental. I was here last year as well. A little bit different atmosphere, about the same amount of people. I think there was about 200 or 250-ish, but a little bit more amped up, if you will, than there. Set the scene for us, for folks that are listening. What is it like here? Maybe tell us about the atmosphere, some of the events that have taken place, the trail. Give us a flavor of the race.
Sure. So, you know, being here at the beautiful Minocqua Winter Park, You have really no choice but to engage with the surroundings. We're in a pretty remote area of Wisconsin, up on a hill in the Land of Lakes. There's not much signal, so a big thing when you come out to these dog races is that you're often the grid in one way or another. However, that being said, so you think, all right, I'm at this very remote ski resort, and it's absolutely buzzing. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of vehicles, rigs that you wouldn't imagine, you know, where you're looking at a truck and it's got this contraption of a box on the back that's holding hundreds of pounds of dogs and all their equipment. People have their different staging areas for their camp and to keep their dogs safe, you know, at our vehicles in between races. Everything over towards the race line is a lot of activity. People running around, checking times, getting ready for their next heats. There's some vendors. So the vendors, I think, are more than Continentals last year. There's food going. There's different the different clubs with some merchandise, gear for the dogs in case anyone needs something while we're here. Keeping all these mushers fed is super important as well. So we appreciate the food trucks. Getting out to the trail, it's beautiful. It's just nice rolling hills, and it's really a good spot to disengage and then just be at one with your dog or your dogs and the trail. Because as soon as we come past this start chute has maybe a football field along the main road where you're really waving at the spectators. But then you get under the trees and all the noise falls away. It's pretty quiet in there. All you hear are the dogs and maybe other mushers that are by you. But even that fades away if they're not 100 feet or so behind or in front of you. The trees catch all that noise. Trail helps there, but they're also trying not to be present if they don't need to be. They kind of just melt back and let you do your thing with your dog. And just silence, you know. Most of my team, I don't have to call out trail directions. They're reading the trail for G or Haw or Woe. So just, it's a good, very quiet on the trail, reaching that synergy with your dog. And then some commotion at the finish line. Definitely all the well-wishers waiting to catch you and, you know, asking how your race went. And that that sense of accomplishment, just passing that line and seeing everyone there. But super busy. And then the chalet is like a beehive. So the chalet is the only building on this entire site now that we're having this event with hundreds and hundreds of people and hundreds of dogs. So it's kind of evasive operations. The USFSS team and the volunteers are working out of here. And then all the mushers gather, you know, warm up a little bit inside and find your friends, look at your times, snag some raffle tickets. It's a big thing.
It is. And beautiful fall colors.
Yes.
Here. What a great place for a dog race. One final question, then a couple of rapid fire. And this one's going to be to Christine. We're doing this midweek, literally middle of the week here. How has your racing gone so far?
Yeah, racing has been interesting so far, I will say. So one of my events is tomorrow and Sunday. Uh-huh. So that's a two dog scooter. And it's with, you know, two of my older dogs. So I call them team reliable. So I'm not worried about that at all. But I raced one dog bike, you know, registered breed on Tuesday and Wednesday. And it's with one of my young guys. He's not quite 2 years old yet. So he just made the cut. So IFSS will not allow a dog younger than 18 months old, you know, to race. So he'll be 2 years old in December. And, you know, he's a big, strong guy. And I love him to death. And he wrapped me around a tree, you know, on day two. So, you know, you have to see the video. That's all I'll say.
Okay. If we can find that video, guys, if we can find that video, we're going to put it on the show notes page.
Oh,
that's the beauty of not only social media, but of sharing for sure.
So, and sometimes things just don't go the way you plan. And we, you know, I wasn't hurt at all. He was fine. I gave him a hug. I got back on the bike and we finished the race. It was fantastic.
Excellent.
You know, so yeah.
All right. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to stick with you. Three more questions here on the podcast. My first question is, what is one piece of gear you always carry with you other than your phone? Anything. I mean, it could be a pocket knife or
chapstick, so many. Yes,
anything.
Yes. All right, so one piece of gear. I know Alex is laughing over here and she's tapping her head. So one piece of gear, I will go with that then, Alex. One piece of gear that I have to have with me, I have to have the best helmet ever.
Okay.
So, and the reason why we're laughing, so the dog that I just talked about, you know, he dumped me here on the race, but he has dumped me before. So, you know, and Alex was riding behind me once when he decided to haul after a squirrel and dumped me on the bike. And my head hit the ground so hard that I will never forget that sound. And so we've been riding Smith helmets. So, you know, shout out to Smith, you know, for their good gear. Yeah, they've been saving my life, you know, this whole mushing journey. So
not a cheap Walmart bike helmet.
No, do not get a cheap Walmart bike helmet. Get a good helmet.
All right, next question is, I ask this to all of our guests, and that is, you've been involved with the sport for a while, and you have time to think about these, Alex, is what is the biggest challenge right now for our sport, whether it be the smaller classes like this, all the way up to Iditarod? Is it climate change? Is it animal rights? Is it financial? Is it sponsors? What do you see as the biggest challenge?
Yeah, honestly, I think the biggest challenge is weather.
Okay.
I think there is definitely some financial challenge, you know, and all of those exist. But I think the weather is getting really hard for us, you know. You know, in years past, you know, as in New Jersey, we could count on it being cold by at least the beginning of October, you know, and we're going to go back to New Jersey, and we had some days in October where it was, you know, 70 degrees. I can't run a Husky in 70 degrees. So it puts the challenge on us of, well, when are we going to train? When are we getting the dogs out there? So, and we've seen even this past year, a lot of the snow races were canceled that had previously been running for years and years, you know, because there's not enough snow. So I personally think that the weather is a great challenge, you know, for us. So we're either going to need to figure out how we do more dry land sports, or all of us are going to be traveling further north to try to get snow.
And it's interesting you say that. I usually don't comment here, but being in Alaska, we only have one dry land event. And usually this is the hotbed of mushing.
Right,
it has
right,
been with right. the Bear Grease and the history of the Trailblazers and all that. All the events are going to dry land now.
Yeah, exactly.
They have a huge dry land scene down here where before it was all snow.
It was
snow.
All snow. Yeah. All snow.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, let's turn it over to Alex. Oh, but last question. I forgot. Where can folks find you? Where are you at on socials? At Instagram, Facebook?
I am on Instagram at CMS Husky Mom.
Okay. All right. Let's go to Alex. Alex, the same questions to you is, what is one piece of gear you never leave home without other than your phone?
Am I allowed to say my dog?
Cannot say your dog.
I mean, the guy, he's the only one working sometimes. Yeah. It's not me. No, I would say my eye protection. I have horrible vision, just ridiculously nearsighted. So I don't always like wearing my glasses. Actually, I have my glasses on now because then I don't have shade protection. One of the most important things for me is being able to see the trail so I can read where I'm supposed to ride and see what the dogs are doing. And there's dirt flying up, there's sand flying up,
rocks.
if it's rocks, if it's raining. I find it very important to keep my vision clear so I can kind of keep the
and
train going.
And do you have
going.
A particular brand or style or something?
I do Ray-Ban polarized for almost everything. I do need the polarization on the lens that really cuts. And there's certain films nowadays that are specifically to, you know, cut snow glare or to cut certain types of light. So I have just a stable of Ray-Bans. And then for rainy days, I'll have anti-fog, just clear goggles.
Okay.
You know, kind of like your Home Depot, even workman's thing.
Okay. Next question is what's the biggest challenge for the sport right now?
I think that the biggest challenge is in growing it. I think that there are enough people who want to participate, but with the way clubs are able to function, which is also kind of a factor of either sponsorships or finances, but the logistics of putting on a race, it can be a lot. It's demanding. So the club only has so many volunteers. Active clubs will try to have 4 or 5 events every year. And then even to grow it, though, it's normally held over weekend, which is what people can accommodate given most people's work schedules and to travel that, you know, you expect a day on the road, 2 days racing, the day or, you know, half a day back home. There's only so many mushers that you can run in that time period on a certain trail without either one running into temps in the afternoon or it's just simply like an insanely long race. I'm liking the adaptation we're seeing at some races like the Farmers Loop, where it's really a trail system that they can change to shorten it up either for weather or to accommodate more teams. Or if something goes on, you know, more volunteers, more help, we can start running 2 courses at the same race.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, that's something that I see as a challenge and that we've talked about maybe tackling that challenge at our home race for Jersey Devil, because it's hundreds of miles of a trail system in the Brandenburn Forest, and they're all suitable for mushing, really. So to say, all right, we want to have this huge Eastern Seaboard race and have even more of a sport class, because not everyone has to do it at, you know, the level where they're going to Worlds to enjoy it. You could do sport, have the elite, have more fun runs. But being able to expand races, which is, yeah.
All right. And the last question for you on this is, how can folks find you?
So you guys can find me. Instagram's our main thing. It's Odin, like O-D-I-N, I, like E-Y-E, canines. So that's my lead boy. He's my one-eyed Odin, the one-eyed sled dog.
And that's the name of your company as well?
Yes.
Very cool. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for joining us here at the Dryland Championships. Good luck on the rest of the week.
Yeah.
We will keep everybody informed. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.